Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Overtime tonight?
Yeah, I mean, the potential is there for that. I just, fellas, it does feel like Connor McDavid is going to do something special. It does. Okay. So whether that's in overtime or whether that's in regulation does not matter to me.
McCarr sends it around. Marner waiting. Connor McDavid scores! Connor McDavid for Canada!
Starting a Friday with the lowest hanging fruit in sports prediction history as Connor McDavid and Canada defeat Team USA. Welcome in. Not all predicted that Canada would win. Not sure it went down. I mean, it went down pretty much as you described, Marty, on the betting line. Right?
50-50. Like, it was a slight, it closed
that
pregame at a slight advantage for Canada, minus 112 to minus 108. Like, it was very close.
Why would that be?
Why would that be?
Because of the boneheaded decision not to dress Kyle Connor.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe.
Especially
the fact
when you don't even have a healthy Matthew Tkachuk.
This is where we're going to start it. I am happy we're starting this.
We have a million places to start.
Yes, Connor McDavid did not have a good game. He said himself after, I didn't have a good game. He ends up getting the goal.
It wasn't even that. Like, it was impossible to believe how much he was struggling with the puck. I don't think I've ever seen him mishandle the puck as much as he was. And I'm so glad he said what he said, because you can be lost in vanilla in a moment, right? He's like, I did not have a good game.
He gets the goal. And Austin Matthews had a fantastic defensive game playing against Connor McDavid. And then in the end, everybody's saying, what is Matthews doing on the winning goal? I'm looking at the goal and I'm like, okay, he thought he was the first guy to go in the corner and they ended up with two guys there. So is that on Matthews? It's miscommunication. But I thought Matthews was really good defensively, especially when they made the change. Matthews with Brady Tkachuk and Matthew Tkachuk had made a difference for Team USA. But unfortunately, Matthew Tkachuk wasn't there. Eerily similar to 2010, Duffer, when in the Vancouver Olympics, Crosby scored the goal in OT. 3-2 game, Crosby in OT. Crosby did not have a good game that night. He said it himself, but he got the winning goal. McDavid did not have a good game that night. He got the winning goal. Best goalie in the league that year in 2009-2010 was Ryan Miller for Team USA. Best goalie in the league this year is Connor Hellebuyck for Team USA. It was very, very similar in the way these two games were played and what happens in the end. McDavid's left in the slot alone. He beats Hellebuyck and he gets a game-winning goal. But yes, how do you, at the end of the day, I think we could criticize Team USA's roster and their decision because they lost. I think we probably would have criticized Canada and their decisions had they lost, right? Who are you starting to go? They won, so you're fine. No Mark Scheifele. There was a lot of those type of things that
this could is have different. We're out. Talking about guys who've been there the whole tournament. I wouldn't revisit. Like, once you're going.
But I was thinking, why not Tage Thompson? Because you need offense. You need goals. Right. And right now, you don't have Tage. You don't have Cole Caulfield. But more importantly, you didn't have Cal Connor. Why? Because you felt he wasn't really playing well in the tournament. He had played 3 games. A player like Cal Connor
The last game didn't matter. They were home and cool.
But he still played 3 games. So players like Cal Connor, you give them 3 games at the start of the season, maybe they get 1 point in 3 games, and then all of a sudden they explode for the next 5.
100%. Right?
Like, did Jack Hughes at a big tournament? No. Jack Hughes was not a factor offensively. There was a ton of players for Team USA that were not a factor. And the guy that was a factor, or the two guys that were factors, like the two Tkachuks, you know that they're banged up, and one of them may not go the whole game. So who do you want to have replacing Matthew Tkachuk on the line with Brady and Matthews? Mm-hmm. You want Chris Kreider there, or do you want Cal Connor? I thought that was a bad decision. And for that, probably you're right. That's why the odds changed, because they realized, hey, no Cal Connor, advantage Canada.
Producer Jeff wanted and I don't, I, you should have put this out on social if you didn't already, but like, you know, winners and losers from the event. And I mean, if I was posting it, I would have said winners and losers, you know, right or wrong answers accepted.
Yeah.
Do you have a clear winner and loser before I get into the ridiculous nature of this?
Okay. Well, winner, I mean, the NHL, the NHLPA for bringing back, some type of best on best tournament. I know no, Russia, no Czech, no Slovaks, no Germany, no Swiss. Like it's okay. There's a lot of really, really, really good players, best players in the game that weren't there, but still some type of tournament. I thought that was a winner. I also think that despite the fact what people say, well, you have a tournament in February. That's the only time to have it. You
no,
are
not
getting
September
the...
is the appropriate time to have
no,
this.
No, it's not.
Always.
You don't get the intensity.
Oh, I guess I guess Canada, Soviet Union in 72 didn't pan out. I guess any of the Canada Cups didn't pan out. Or the World Cup in 96.
In 1912
Come
when
on,
Canada
man.
Played.
It's the best time.
No, I think February is the best time. I think like I laugh because we talked about it like, oh, NFL and with the Super Bowl and the NHL goes dark for 2 weeks. But I actually feel that it worked out perfectly for the NHL because the Jim Rome was tweeting about the game last night. Like he never talks hockey. There was everybody in
he
the sports
talk.
World
he
was
likes
talking
hockey.
Hockey.
Yeah. He likes hockey. So
likes
I would disagree with you on that.
But everybody was talking about hockey.
Only
I think
because
that is
Canada
the
and
time.
The U.S. made it. Had Finland and Sweden made it, fully comprised of NHL players, ratings would have been a dud. Everybody would have been in scramble mode. I would have loved it because I happen to love Finns and Swedes, but...
Yeah,
so.
And I get that. I also think that the product on the ice was really good, which helped from people watching, right? And that was... But yes, you want Canada, USA, that's fine. I'm sure people in Europe wanted to see Sweden, Finland play, and the ratings would have been crazy over there because the Finns and the Swedes would have been watching. But... I feel like that's the time, and I get it. Matthew Tkachuk's going to be gone for a long time now, apparently. Brady Tkachuk said, it's not good for my brother. You got Shea Theodore gone. You got Charlie McAvoy gone. You got a lot of players that got banged up, and it's the price to pay. But you know what? The players want it. Like Matthew Tkachuk, if he was given the option, sit out the game last night or dress and give everything you got knowing that maybe you're not 100%, he took the, I want to play. I want to give it everything I've got. So the players are willing to do it. I say, you go.
Well, that's a coach's job is to make the right decision and not fall victim to a player's emotions.
No, but I'm more saying talking about the injury side, like the Florida Panthers are going to say, why
well,
did
he
you
also
play
just
last night?
Won a Stanley Cup? It's a lot easier for Matthew to say that now. And I'm not dismissing the importance of international competition, but his place in the game changed dramatically over the last 2 years. One, when he wasn't 100% healthy, despite an incredible spring run.
Broken
only to
sternum
lose.
2 years ago. Yeah, broken sternum
and, then,
and playing.
And then to come back and win the cup.
Yes.
It changes how you probably verbalize your emotions in a moment. Because you now have all this other success behind you. Anyway.
You know who else is a winner from last night, Duffer? Jacob
no.
Slavin. Like, yeah. He has had an unbelievable tournament. And him, like, it was kind of funny because it was Canes on Canes. Like, Seth Jarvis had a great chance in the slot, and Slavin slid and blocked it. I don't remember if it was the first or second period, but Jacob Slavin... and Brock Faber are the new American top defenseman tandem. Like, I know we talked Quinn Hughes and Charlie McAvoy and all of that, but Slavin and Faber were amazing.
Well, I would say I went out much further on a limb last year than Dreger did with his Connor McDavid prediction when I said Brock Faber should have won the Calder Trophy last
yes.
year and kept banging that drum. Maybe now yes. people will understand, because where was Connor Bedard in this tournament? Anyway.
The beach in Turks and Caicos.
I would say the winner of this event was the Washington Capitals. And let
oh, yeah,
us
I see what you're saying.
No players involved. How much will that help them down the stretch? Now, it's worth noting that even though they've been a little uneven. Capitals are 12-1-6 in their last 19 games. Now they have full rest. So that's a win. Dovetailing
it's
off
only a
of
win if you have success. Like, I'm just saying, like, I know that there was only 90 players playing. So 80% of the league was on hiatus for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But if you come back and all of a sudden you lose the next 5 out of 6, you're like, maybe that break wasn't good. But it's probably more likely that they're rested, they're healed up, and they're going to be good to go.
Dovetailing off of what you said about Slavin, it's actually the Carolina Hurricanes who are winners on this, because had Slavin been walking himself into unrestricted free agency as opposed to signing his extension last year, mm-hmm. he would undoubtedly be getting more than the $6.4 million starting next year for 8 years. So that is a huge, huge, huge win for the Carolina Hurricanes. Another winner, and it would have been nice to have seen him last night, but nobody else would have wanted to see this, was Mikael Granlund. A player I was really excited about, the way he performed for an abysmal San Jose team before moving on to Dallas. So Dallas is actually a winner here for acquiring Granlund before.
He was good.
He was really good. And it's just a continuation of how he's been playing. So and
Jordan
the
Binnington, Duffer.
Huh?
I feel
well,
like
he was already
Jordan
a winner, in my opinion. So it,
but that, here's the
this
thing.
This is exactly why I went down the path yesterday with you. Like, I'm not even going to sit here and play the silly game of put a check mark behind beside who's got the edge in goaltending, because one was going to win, one was going to lose,
and
I
were
had
both
more
good.
Than 50% faith that Binnington was going to be the guy.
Yeah, and they were both good. Hellebuck was great in the game too. Made some really good save. He was really good. But the thing with Binnington is, I think what John Cooper put a wager on, I need a goaltender that is going to make a difference if the game is tied in the third period and overtime in the final, right? And he wanted Jordan Binnington to be that guy. Now, I don't think Binnington was good against the Sweden game one. He was okay against the U.S., gave up a bad goal to Gensel, and was good until third period against the Finns. So you're looking at his three games, you say average, 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 and you look at the first half of this game, you're thinking, okay, it's good, but can you do something more? And Binnington proved to many that it doesn't matter how you start, it's how you finish, and making the big saves at that moment. He, like Robin Austin Matthews, Robin Brady Tkachuk in OT was exactly why he was the selection. So I think, like, for me, that said, Aiden Hill, I think, should start. Mm-hmm. And look, maybe Aiden Hill would have won it. I don't know. We won't
sure
know.
Sure he would. He
but, has, yeah, exactly. Because they had a good team, and they he's a good goalie. But I think Jordan Binnington and John Cooper, they won their wager of saying, I need a guy that's going to make that big save in the overtime. And he did that multiple times last night.
So does he get traded? Does he move ahead of John Gibson and or any other netminder who the Oilers or any other team might be looking to acquire? Maybe we punt for 17, 18 more minutes and have Shayna address it when she comes on at the bottom of the hour.
Well, I'll tell you quickly before she's on, so I'm not influenced by her and she's not influenced by me. If I was the St. Louis Blues, I would definitely try to take in the momentum that maybe this is causing and try to maximize the return. Because Joel Ofer, who's their other goaltender, actually has better numbers than Jordan Binnington this year. And the St. Louis Blues are probably not going to make the playoffs this year. And there's 2 more years of Binnington. So, and Binnington is a 31-year-old goaltender that, are you going to sign him when he's 33 or 34 in two and a half years from now? So probably the time to do it would be now.
Well, the winners and losers, the loser, of course, was the Winnipeg Jets, because Kyle Connor didn't play, Josh Morrissey didn't play, and Connor Hellebuck took the loss. So that's a tough one for Winnipeg. And
Morrissey was sick.
Yeah, I know.
That sucks.
Do you know what it's like to be sick on big moments in your life? It sucks. So that puts you in the wrong category. Yeah. Like, I'm not saying he's ready not happy to for watch. His teammates. I'm saying he didn't get to play. That's a loss. Yeah.
Winnipeg, as a whole city, as a whole fan base, is getting ready to watch. And there are three guys, two of them are not playing, and the other one loses. Now, maybe they're happy for Team Canada, but I'm just saying it's still like the...
They didn't even get to cheer for Scheifele on Canada. So add another to that loss column.
Add that, exactly.
You know what 100%. I mean? Anyway, will this be the only big losses the Jets have to deal with this year? Is this like, let's get our pain out of the way? Does this put them on the right path to have that monumental spring run they have always coveted?
Well, I think if you're Mark Scheifele, you're going to say, I should have been on that Team Canada. I'm going to show everybody that I'm a winner, and I'm going to put that team on my back. If I'm Kyle Connor, I'm saying I should have been dressed for Team USA in the final game, and maybe we'd have won. So I'm going to put the team on my back, and Connor Hellebuck's the same thing. Last year against Colorado, I wasn't good in the playoffs, despite the fact that I said some of my best hockey I've ever played. Anyway, I'm going to put the team on my back. I think there's a lot of fuel that can be tossed on that fire in Winnipeg. So I'm going to think positive here and say yes. But it does feel like Winnipeg is always that team that you want to cheer for. And then at the end of the year, I say, I'm not talking about the Jets anymore. And then I start talking about the Jets again because they bring you right back.
Yeah, they're first in points right now, second in points percentage to Washington in the NHL standings. So, again, a third of the season to go. Buffalo resumes their season tomorrow night. Sabres are practicing today. Greenway, Cousins, Quinn would be something to look for tomorrow, potentially, based on how practice is going today. And obviously, just the urgency with which they need to come out of the blocks here and try to get back, you know, scrub the last game before the break, which was a loss in Nashville, and resume winning ways here as their home. And we've already talked to, you know, extensively about just how busy the schedule gets at the end of this month, but most importantly in the month of March. Do you have any takeaway from how the lines are at practice, and if there's, well, I we've had 2 weeks to kind of discuss where they're at, so I don't think there's a lot of new material here as they get set for the return to action tomorrow.
Everybody's available pretty much, right? Like Jordan Greenway is back, Matthias Samuelsson is back, Beck Malenstein is back on the ice, so you got a full house now of healthy bodies, and how does that change the way that Lindy Ruff and his coaching staff is going to be using players or rotating players? Like right now, like you could see a Zach Benson being more of a fourth line guy and maybe in or out of the lineup, depending on how it goes. I don't know that that's what you want for the development of a 19-year-old, but at the same time, okay, well, what is the best lineup you can put together in trying to win games? And so when you have everybody healthy, it affects things. So I don't know. Look, I'm excited about tomorrow. I'm excited to see the Sabres back on the ice. Rangers, it's a early evening game, 5:30. We're going to be on the air at 5 o'clock. I'm going to be at the casino. Going to have Derek Roy in the pregame. Like, there's a lot going on. I'm excited about it. But I want to make sure that, like, Jiří Kulik and Peterka and Thompson go 100% right away. Like, I want to see that happening. So I'm going to be excited about the return on the ice, but it has to be a good return to keep, you know, maybe trying to do what Lindy Ruff is trying to lay out for them.
Two this weekend at KeyBank Center, because the PWHL takeover happens on Sunday afternoon, 4 o'clock, New York and Boston. Of note, and you would know this if you're following the Sabres social feed, the fact that both teams are going to be holding practices at Lecom Harbor Center tomorrow. Those are great opportunities to get up close with these incredible PWHL players. They're going to be doing autograph sessions. Each team, it starts at 10 in the morning, and then so you have back-to-back practices at 10 and noon, autograph opportunities. It really is exactly what Tessa Bonhomme was talking about to us the other day. The work from a marketing standpoint that these players are putting in to not only make the league viable in its current markets, but make this takeover tour all the more impactful in every city that it's in. So, you know, tomorrow's the first step for, you know, fans to kind of rub shoulders with the players who will then take to the ice on Sunday at 4.
Duffer, we had something happen in the PWHL last night that has never happened before in the league.
It's actually not true. You got sucked in by the headline.
What?
The players involved got roughing penalties, not fighting, so it was not the first fight in PWHL history. So,
well,
Marty,
well, we haven't had our
details.
First fighting
read
majors.
Read the details
okay.
of the story. Don't be going for clickbait.
I'm not, but I watched the highlights, and I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen, like, two players in the PWHL absolutely swing punches at one another.
Gloves like, on.
Yeah, well, I'm not fighting you with a cage on, taking my gloves off. I am going to hurt you more.
Take the helmet off and fight.
Yeah, I'm going to keep the helmet on, and I'm going to keep the gloves on.
But that's what the headline suggested, and that's why it was wrong.
Well, I saw the clip, and I was like, wow, it started in the corner, and that was Boston. Like, Boston is going to be here for that game. They play tough. Like, when we talked to Tessa, she talked about Hillary Knight as being, like, this player that – with her size and her strength and the way that she plays, like the physicality. And so we had that roughing minors, coincidental roughing minors that looked more like a fight in a sense. But yeah, it was pretty good. And again, like, you're right. They're going to go to practice. They're going to be so available for everybody. The game Sunday is going to be fun. I remember years ago when the Buttes had played a game in the afternoon, and the Sabres played at night. It was Minnesota and Buffalo, and the building was buzzing at KeyBank. But this is even 10 steps more than that, because the PWHL has gotten to the point now where they are a major league. Like, that is, I consider them a major league in our North American sports right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would be among a large group that would hope that this takeover tour leads to inevitable expansion, and would be great to have, you know, the PWHL in Buffalo in the future on a regular basis. So Amherst have two this weekend on home ice. They are in action tonight against Belleville, looking to build upon what's been a really good run. I think, you know, the fact that they're sitting first overall in the American Hockey League right now with the youth on their roster is pretty remarkable. They're 5-2 this month. That was on the heels of a 7-3-1 January, and coming off a shutout win on Wednesday night. They get Belleville tonight. They have Toronto tomorrow, a 5 p.m. start, teddy bear toss.
Woohoo!
And if you didn't see the buildup to the teddy bear toss and the video that the Amherst posted on social, I would encourage you to go look for it. It featured, in quotations, Andrew Mossbrooks inside a giant teddy bear costume, surprising unsuspecting players who were sitting on the couch being interviewed next to these giant, allegedly stuffed animals. So
it looked like
great.
So for those that have seen the movie Ted, it looks like a big Ted, but it's like bigger than actual Ted, the character in the movie. But it is funny how one is an actual teddy bear and one has Andrew in it. So you're walking in, you don't think you're going to get surprised. But yeah, it would scare the crap out of me. If I sat there unexpected and it happened, Duffer, I'd scream and run out.
I would too. And in defense of many of the players, they sat down with some sort of trepidation. Like, they could feel or sense that something would happen, could happen. And even knowing that, they still then got blindsided when the bear moved. So it was really well done. And most importantly, go to the game if you're in Rochester tomorrow, and bring many stuffed animals. Like, this, not to be greedy here for local charity, but like, don't just bring one. Look at what happened in Hershey. Like, did they not top 100,000 1,000 stuffed animals thrown on the ice this year at their game?
Yes, and a goal wasn't good. It wasn't a good goal.
No, that was Cleveland.
That was Cleveland.
You're mixing up the Amherst-Cleveland game with the actual orchestrators of the Teddy Bear Toss.
They're so fun. But we've had a couple of incidents this year. One was in Cleveland, you're right, where the puck at the post didn't go in, and then they started throwing teddy bears on the ice. And the announcer's like, no, it's not a goal, it's not a goal. And then we had the one in junior hockey where one of the player, a visiting player, was like, shot the teddy bear back into the crowd, one of them, and then he got suspended. So we've had some eventful teddy bear tosses, but I'm really looking forward to see how that turns out in Rochester. Bring a ton of teddy bears, five or six of them, just bring them in and throw them on the ice.
Yeah, and honestly, it doesn't have to be limited to bears. All stuffed animals are incredibly appreciated in this situation.
General sense is teddy bears, but yes, you're right. Hey, I know we're going to have Shayna coming up, Duffer.
We're trying to get there.
I was scrolling through social media, and obviously, like, PK Subban's been pretty involved on social media and ESPN, and he's had some comments coming off the NBA All-Star Game and the Four Nations Face-Off, and at first I was critical of PK because I'm like, well, you can't compare the Four Nations Face-Off to the All-Star Game, like the NBA. You can't even compare it to the NHL. The NHL All-Star Game is blah. So my first question to Shayna is, will we ever see an NHL All-Star Game again? Just because we know that they never matched the intensity, they never matched the quality of events, and it's kind of like, do we want another All-Star Game now that we have Olympics and World Cups every other year? Like, that to me is something that I think the league has to really look into. Maybe that is the best thing that would come out of this tournament and say, probably don't need an All-Star Game anymore because we have something that's even better.
Well, not unlike the success of this event. That falls on the players and their interest level. And I would disagree because in the past, there used to be some really cool and maybe not intense, but competitive All-Star Games. The format has changed. The willingness to participate
in this
seemingly,
century, though, have we had a good one in this century?
Yeah, I was there in Montreal, like 2009. So,
yeah, that was.
I haven't worked all of them. I'm saying that when I've been in attendance, what you have to keep in mind, and maybe there's multiple weekends, multiple openings in a schedule where you can still have international. And you're not going to have international every single year.
No, they're planning on All-Star Game and Olympics next year. They're planning on the two events happening.
Well, what months? Like the same month?
All-Star Game, probably event leading into the Olympic break, like kind of have like a send-off kind of event for the Olympics.
Well, I would say this. What I don't want to ever get lost in conversations about All-Star weekends is fan access.
Which...
And it's amazing when you are there in whatever city it's in, it is overwhelming to see all clubs represented. And especially, like, I'm talking about the fans walking the concourse, being at, all the different events that surround it. I will never not be blown away by the fan support, the age demographics, most importantly, right? It's generational, and you're bringing kids up close to the superstars
of the game. The mascots, games, and all of that people showed up to, the fan fest. Like, it's great for the people there. Is it great for all other 31 markets? That's what it is.
Right, but it's about growing the game. So if we're talking about it from a Four Nations standpoint, I don't want people to lose sight of that. Ryan Miller's Catwalk for Charity is coming back. We heard Rich Driller tease this the other day on Sabres Live, and it will be at Seneca One Tower on April 10th. It's going to showcase the city's culture through young fashion entrepreneurs, area celebrities, athletes, influencers, local cuisine, of course, benefiting the Ryan Miller Legacy Endowment Fund. Benefiting Courage of Carly at Roswell Park. So head to Sabres.com for more details on that. We are back with Shayna Goldman from The Athletic next on Sabres Live.
We're Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
In the history of Sabres Live, we've often had theme days, including one word. This could be the most dangerous question I've ever asked in the presence of Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. One word to describe the finale of the Four Nations.
Electric.
Oh, yeah, what a
electric.
Cop-out.
Electric. Listen, what do you want me to do? Get everyone fined here? I love this tournament. I don't want to go back to the NHL schedule in the middle of February. I'm done. Get me to the trade deadline and the playoffs. Like, this brought up the energy and the NHL is going to kill it.
Well, I would say this. I mean, obviously the overall interest and excitement and result and everything, you know, meaning final game going to overtime is great. If I'm splitting hairs, like, I didn't think the game was as exciting as I would have liked. Like, sorry, but I grew up in the 87 Canada Cup era with everything being 6-5. Like, I mean, like, 6-5 is like the ultimate hockey score when you have superstars on both sides being able to create so much offensively. But yes, it was pretty darn close to electric.
Shayna, did you think it was too many man in OT for Canada? Because,
yes.
Canada, like, US did not get a power play. Canada got their one power play, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that's definitely too many men, and it's going to end on a U.S. power play on a too many men call. And Ray Ferraro on ESPN kind of said, nobody played the puck and it was close enough. But Braden Point was full on the forecheck. He was in the play. I thought it was too many men on Canada on this one, even though I kind of wanted Canada to win, but still, like, I thought they should have got called.
Yes, I agree. I think Canada was rejecting us. For some reason, they were like, we cannot have too many men right now. And it's like, please, just join our list of sponsors. Like, join in on the fun. And they just wouldn't do it. They wouldn't bite. And I can't believe it. But I did think it was too many men. I understand they didn't want to call a penalty there. But sometimes you want to see that consistency. And I guess the thing is, there haven't been enough potential penalty calls in overtime of this tournament to know what the standard would be, right? Like, we know what it is for the NHL postseason. We don't know per se what it is here because we had three overtimes altogether, if I'm thinking correctly, and one of them, Sweden-Finland, was over very quickly. So, you know, we don't have that gauge, I guess.
Interesting that in the immediate hours after this tournament concluded, Finland has become the talking point with Mikko Rantanen, back in the trade cycle, and Kevin Lankinen getting a 5-year contract extension. This needs to be said. He's making $875,000 and didn't have a job at the start of the year. Now he's got a 5-year, $4.5 million extension from the Canucks.
I mean, it's wild, right? Because, first of all, I still can't believe he didn't have a job until the end of training camp. And it's not, in hindsight, it's based on what he did last year in Nashville. He was very good there. Their goaltending helped power them to the playoffs. Like, yes, the team improved in front of the crease, but he was a big part of it. The other part of it is, you know, he's been very good for the Canucks. I think he's a lot better when he's on a roll and he's playing a lot. You saw when Demko got back and his role changed. It seemed like first he hit a wall, then he found his footing again, but then it seemed like not getting those, you know, regular reps was hurting him. And then I think he got back on track heading into the tournament where he was very good as the surprising number one over UC Saros after a tough beginning of the tournament for him. But that contract is, it's something. The Canucks and their cap management is something. And it tells you they don't, I guess, trust the Demko injury situation. And it's been a huge storyline the last year now, and he's out again with injury. So I understand it from that perspective, but you look at it and say that no movement clause in the first 2 years, like, that's a lot of money. You have I think it's $9.5 million in cap to a goalie, and I know the cap is rising, but I don't know if that's what I'm committing to if I'm the Canucks.
Obviously.
Oh, you didn't follow up on Rantanen, though. What do you think?
No, but I want to ask you about Rantanen to, like, lead you to it. So Mikko Rantanen, the word is, well, maybe Carolina's going to have to flip him before the trade deadline because maybe that's not going the direction they wanted to. I did a quick math. Like, you know, Panarin is at 13.2% of the cap. I think Willie Nylander, 13.1. Pasternak, around 13%. Like, top wingers are getting paid 13% of the cap. Like, that is the most. 13% of 95.5 next year is somewhere in the 12.5 to 12.75 million a year. Is Rantanen wanting 14 million? Like, is that why Colorado didn't get him and didn't sign him? And now Carolina thinks they're not going to be able to do it as well?
Yeah, it's a good question because, you know, nobody knows what he wants except for him and his agent, I'm sure. And there's a case to push for that 14 million, right? You could look at it and say, well, you're the number two forward on a team in Colorado, right? And the number two forward, say in Edmonton, Leon Draisaitl gets X. I want that as well. And obviously there's a difference in position, but this isn't the Draisaitl of years past that took a faceoff and essentially played wing or only played exclusively on Connor McDavid's wing. So it's a little bit different here. That center to wing thing is always going to be the disparity. But you go to the Hurricanes now and you are the number one forward, right? It's you and Sebastian Aho. It's a lot different than saying you're the number two to, you know, Nathan MacKinnon. So I think that you make your case to make more money. I don't think it's the end of the world if they had to pay up a little bit extra because you can for star players. I think that we get so mucked up by like overpayments, right, of the middle class that sometimes we forget if you're going to overpay anyone, let it be your star player. And I know the numbers are so outlandish that sometimes it's a little bit tough that you're like, well, it's 14 million is a lot, is really hard to swallow. If any team can handle that, it is the Hurricanes. So, I mean, if I'm them, I'm going to try to go below that, obviously. But I wouldn't trade him anyway. And I know that might not be the favorite take, but like ride it out in the playoffs.
Exactly. Because it was a bold trade. However, everybody lauded Carolina for pulling it off and getting Rantanen. Because even though Natchez is having an excellent year, Carolina got the best player in the deal. If, and this is a huge if, because this is all speculation, right? If they were to trade Rantanen to a team that would be renting him, i.e. going for it, what is Carolina going to get back now other than futures, which doesn't help them at all as they try to stay close to Washington and finally make a longer run in the playoffs?
Yeah, exactly. You could retain some salary and maybe juice the return that way, but then who else on the market is going to come close to that? If you're the Hurricanes, you need that player. They're a team that they can actually afford to go for that big swing, right? Because they have a very good foundation in place and they need something that's going to take them to the next level. This is that type of player. They need someone who's going to perform in the postseason. This is that type of player, right? And I think sometimes that gets a little bit overblown, but I think you can make the argument that they need that, right? Here's that finisher. On paper, he is exactly what they need. And I know it's easy to look at it now and go, well, look at Natchez. I think we forget, too, the difference in the systems, right? We always talk about the strength of the Canes systems and how they maximize every player. Natchez never was a perfect fit for it. It's no surprise he's playing well with Nathan MacKinnon, which is a lot different than playing with, I don't know, Jesperi Kotkaniemi as his primary center, right? Like, you're taking a leap
forward. But he
was
having an excellent year, despite all the background with Carolina. That's the thing,
yes.
Right?
Like, well, yes, but I'm going to nitpick it a little bit because the scoring was there, but the underlying numbers weren't. So it wasn't exactly surprising that the scoring tapered off when it did, right? I felt like it was never going to last unless something changed below the surface to support it a little bit better. Now he has both working for him, and I think it's just because of the complementary environment. Like, you're playing with someone who has the speed to keep up with you and complements your game better than before. Rantanen's not clicking as well with the Hurricanes, and I think everyone's, like, really focusing in on this right now. And it's, like, one, totally different systems, and it's going to take a minute. You're doing it on the fly. It's a lot harder. And there's an injury in the mix there, too, right? Why he missed it, what was it, the last game heading into the break, and there were even questions if he would start for Team Finland. I do want to see them experiment with him a little bit more. I want to see them experiment with Taylor Hall more, too. I want to see Hall playing with Svechnikov, and I wouldn't be surprised if they try to put Rantanen with a right-handed center a little bit more than Aho. I think Aho is very good, but maybe put a right-handed winger there, because I think that's where the disconnect is a little bit at 5-on-5. He's so used to playing a righty in MacKinnon, and it was funny. He played with Jack Roslovic a couple of shifts, and you see him look really good there and elevate Roslovic because he's right-handed. I wonder if there are tweaks that they can make to maximize him within the Canes system before they say, okay, this doesn't work. Like, you should be trying everything, and there just hasn't been enough time to do it.
Right.
I teased before the break about, well, should the NHL ever do another All-Star weekend the way that we know that they've been the last few years? This was a really fun week and a half of hockey, despite the fact that it was only like, what, 7 games of hockey? Like, it wasn't a lot of games, but it was fun. You got the Olympics next year. Like, Do you need to do All-Star and Olympics in the same year? And then you have the injuries now, but the player seems to be okay with that. How much of an effect, number one, will it be for Boston not having Charlie McAvoy in the playoff race and Florida not having Matthew Tkachuk potentially for a while here? They're forcing the Atlantic, Vegas, not having Shea Theodore. Like, those are big guys that are going to be missing. So that and the All-Star, where are you at on that?
So I actually don't love the idea of the All-Star game and the Olympics at the same time. But I do think that you need, you can't do this every year, right? Because right. I think you're going to lose an element of like how special it is and how big the moment is. I think that every other year rotating between the Olympics and Four Nations, like there's something that can work there for sure. And you do an All-Star break in between. I think you build off the momentum of last year's All-Star break, which we were all saying was so much better, right? The players gave their input and it was really improved. The whole skills competition was a lot better. Build off of that and put that in place every other year. It's just the fact of the matter. I think that you need to have something there and just keep taking player and maybe even viewer feedback to see how you can make this a better process for everyone, that the players want to be a part of it. But I think you just have to have something in between. The injuries are going to be tough to weather. I think for the Bruins, it's going to force them to make the decisions they have to make. That is a team to me that needs a retool so badly. And it's as simple as stepping back this year at the deadline, selling a couple pieces, positioning themselves better to have a big offseason, and then going for it next year. I don't think you need to tear it down, but I think this is your moment to do it. And the McAvoy injury should force you to do it. Vegas has a lot of defensive depth. They should be really happy that Pietrangelo is rested because they're going to need him and Hanifin to be a lot better with Theodore out. I think they have the defensive depth to withstand it a little bit better than other teams might. I think guys like Haig and Whitecloud are really good, and the systems have helped them a lot. The power play is where I'm the most interested to see the impacts, honestly, because that power play has gotten them out of a lot of binds, has been really good, and you're missing your quarterback. So that is going to be huge for them. And without Tkachuk, the Panthers are still a very good team and a very deep team. I'm not worried about them per se. I think it tests you to go with different combinations and different looks and to get other guys going so that when the stretch run comes along, like, you know how to fire up your team in all different facets if it's not working. So there's a way to use it to their advantage and then have him rested and ready for the postseason.
That would be a dream for Florida to make sure that he is back and healthy in that scenario. We have less than 30 seconds. One player whose stock rose in the Four Nations to the point where that player will be traded at the deadline.
Oh my God, traded? I thought we were just talking about good stocks, and I'm like, oh, Dylan Larkin.
I'm Hagel. Thinking Sidney Crosby, Erik Karlsson,
Jordan Binnington.
Oh my God, I don't know the answer to this one right now.
That's okay. You can post it on social, and we can.
I know I have to think about it because so many guys who you thought might be traded, like, they didn't play, they were hurt, they were this, yes, they were that, right? Like, because I was supposed to do something on this for Monday, and so many players already got traded that it got canceled.
All right. Keep thinking about it. Share it with us on social if you like. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the NHL's return.
Mm-hmm.
Dana Goldman from The Athletic. Sabres play tomorrow. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
There's not much time left in our final installment of Sabres Live this week, so happy birthday, Kelsey Grammer. 70. I actually would have guessed a little bit older on that one, only because he's been around so long and I've enjoyed his work.
He's been around since the Cheers days. I mean, yeah, exactly. I would have thought.
Technically, he was around before the Cheers days, but yes.
I know, but Frazier was huge, right? Obviously, Frazier was huge, but Cheers day. Oh, and by the way, today, Duffer, was a maintenance day for me. Was a dentist appointment, a haircut later. Like, it was the Friday before the league comes back. Mm. It was a maintenance day. I'm getting myself all put back together so we can have a good show tomorrow.
Yeah, well, not to take away from your maintenance, but... like, I've got blood work this afternoon and about 900 more appointments in the next month now scheduled. So
you've had a maintenance year.
It's been a half year for sure. I'd like the other half of the year to be an awful lot better.
I'll take my dentist and my haircut, my barber appointment.
So you've got the Daily Double now. And I forgot to mention this early in the week. You've got your beautiful full voice back and shiny teeth. What a way to hit the weekend.
Yeah, and now going to have a new haircut for tomorrow as well.
Can't wait. See you tomorrow. Game night, Sabres Rangers.